We're talking now with Rick Howarth, and he is a candidate and an incumbent on the Sandpoint City Council. Rick, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris, and great to get to know you today.
So let's start by getting to know you. Tell us a bit about yourself, how long you've lived here, how'd you wind up in Sandpoint, what you consider qualifications for this office that you're seeking.
Sure, I'll take a bit of a long route to get there. So I was born in Montana, Great Falls, Montana. About 7 years old, my family decided that we moved to Idaho in the Wallace, Kellogg, Osborne area. Eventually, we moved to Grangeville, where I graduated from high school. I played all sports. I played football, baseball, basketball, regularly against Sandpoint.
Well, the Grangeville coach would not let you not play.
No. Yeah. I mean, almost needed everybody to be on the team, right? Yeah. Just to have a team. But we'd play Sandpoint. Sandpoint was typically much better than we were, bigger school. Mm. So that was kind of my first introduction to Sandpoint. After high school, went to the University of Idaho. I majored in engineering, got my bachelor's degree and master's degree in mechanical engineering. During my time at the University of Idaho, I met a beautiful young lady from Sandpoint. We eventually got married in 1982 here in the Lutheran Church. That's really when I started to say Sandpoint was home. She was born in Seattle, but from a very young age grew up here in Sandpoint. So got to know Sandpoint. Loved the outdoors, loved the lake. We both loved to ski, so we'd always come back. But after we got married, I got a job in Texas with Texas Instruments. So my career was all in the high-tech field. With Texas Instruments, and then after that I moved on and joined Intel. So we spent 15 years in Texas. We had condos here and places that we always had, so summers and Christmases we were always back here. After Texas we moved to Seattle, where I joined Intel. About 7 years after joining Intel, they sent me to Asia. It was going to be a two-year assignment that turned into 15 years. So my wife and I first moved to China, Shanghai, China. Then we moved down to Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, spent about seven years in Vietnam, and then back to Northeast China, so a total of 15 years. Along that journey, my wife and I adopted twin Chinese girls. And we got them when they were 1 year old. And so my wife and them would always come back for the summers. We'd always be back for Christmas as well. And then finally in 2018, we moved back where it was with really the first time where I got to live in Sandpoint full time, even though I was still traveling a lot for Intel, and ultimately retired in 2020. And that's when I got to make Sandpoint home permanently, live here full time, really get to learn a little bit about the community and again, explore the beauty that Sandpoint has to offer. Mm-hmm. Quite a journey.
Yeah, it sure is. any other experience or groups you've involved with, other public offices held, you might want to mention as a potential qualification?
Yeah, so I'm on several boards. I was on the Lighthouse board from 2020 to 2025. I just stepped away in 2025. In fact, I was chairman of the board for the last 2.5 years. As you stated in your introduction, I am an incumbent on the city council. I was appointed in 2024 by Mayor Grimm when Jason Welker stepped off to take a position in the city. So I've got a year and a half of kind of inside and learning about politics. As you heard in my opening monologue, I am a business guy. So the City of Sandpoint, in many respects, is a business. It is a business, right? It runs. It's a $50 million business. That's what the annual budget is. But it took me a bit of time to go learn the ins and outs and what are the revenue flows for the city and the structure and all of those sorts of things. Kind of feels like I'm kind of settling in and got a good solid feel for that as well. I also am on the Valor Christian High School board, helping to start that school. I was on the Kinderhaven board until it closed a couple years ago as well. And so really, as I came back and I retired, I really wanted to understand and be active in the local community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for all that. So how you're on the council, how do you think the current council and administration are doing in terms of just performance in their roles?
Yeah. And I mean, ideally, that's a question you ask of the citizens of Sandpoint. As I interact with the citizens of Sandpoint, I think it's going okay. The challenge for the city is that the needs are bigger, or there are more things that need to be worked on than the city has money to go do. And so it becomes a question of what are our priorities. I think the mayor has correctly identified the needs, and that's trying to upgrade and maintain the infrastructure that we have today. None of it's sexy, right? We talk about a wastewater treatment plant. That's not a sexy thing, but we've got a plant that's parts of it are 50 years old, parts of it are 70 years old. The team that operates and maintains that system is daily having to repair things, whether it's a pipe burst or whatever it is. We've had a few excursions where we exceeded the limits of the DEQ and dumped water into the river. Never a good thing. So that's a big project. You know, it's gone out. The council just a couple weeks ago approved the city going out for a $130 million bond, a mm-hmm. very, very large bond. And if the city is not able to then find other funding sources that will lower that amount, it basically doubles the rate for all of the citizens' Sandpoint. Huge impact. So we've got, this is an interesting challenge because I think everybody would agree we need to improve it. Nobody likes or nobody wants to go double their wastewater bills. Right?
And as it's currently formulated, that would be the maximum.
That would be the maximum.
Because the city can go after grants and other money that could bring that down.
Yep. And it's kind of after the fact. You have to go past the bond. And mm-hmm. then at that point, we can go seek whether it's state or federal grants to mm-hmm. go bring that down. And that's certainly our hope and desire. Mm-hmm. But not knowing what that ability is going to be, the citizens of Sandpoint have to look at it and say, well, gosh, would I be willing to double my bill if, in fact, they can't find those grants? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting dynamic just in the timing of how that's all going to work. So that's one big one. Road infrastructure, if you look at our roads, some are good, some are falling apart. So that's an issue. If you look at City Beach and parking lot down there, the potholes are huge and haven't been upgraded. So there's a lot of infrastructure in the city that needs to be worked on. I think those are the right priorities. I think the citizens believe those are the right priorities. And it's just a matter now of making sure that we can do that as efficiently and as effectively as we can. Again, there is not a surplus of money that the city has to be able to go say, well, I can do every road. We have to do kind of the most critical at first. And then deciding what those priorities are is important as well. So I think through that, trying to be open and transparent, building trust with the community. I think any survey when citizens say, do you have trust in that the government will do the right thing? That's pretty low on the national scale. It's low in Sandpoint as well. The only way we're going to go be able to attack that problem is just to be open and honest. Here's what it's going to cost us. Here's how we're going to manage it, and then give regular updates to the citizens. So I do think we're working on the right things. The other thing I would say is we were able to pass a comprehensive plan about a year ago that looks out over the next 5 or 10 years of kind of how we want to guide the growth of Sandpoint. That had tremendous citizen input over more than a year to go help craft that.
Actually started out before pandemic, I think.
Yes,
it actually started collecting citizen comment on it, and then it stretched down past that.
Yep, and we finally got that through. And so, you know, in many ways, that's kind of the voice of the citizen saying, okay, as we grow, as we mature, here's the way we want to go do it. We want to do it responsibly. We want to maintain the quaintness and beauty of Sandpoint. We want to protect the beautiful natural resources we have as well. And so really much of what the city is doing is trying to align to the priorities that were outlined in that comprehensive plan.
By the citizens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, one change that's come to the city in the last year and a half is we had a city administrator position, and, you know, she left. And when she left and when Mayor Graham came in, he elected not to fill that position again. Do you think the city needs a city administrator position, divorced from any personalities, or is the current structure where department heads are responsible for their departments without that that overseer, is that sufficient?
Great question. So what I find intriguing about this question is that we're not actually creating anything new. We just keep cycling back and forth between two models, right? Is it mayor and department head? Is it mayor and administrator and department heads? The citizens 4 years ago voted for Mayor Graham. Part of his platform was to go transform that. We're about a year and a half into that transformation. And I think my perspective is either model will work. If you have really strong department heads, not only in their functional areas, when I say strength, but being able to work as a team, if that maturity is there, then the mayor department head works really well when we have a mayor that's not full-time. So Mayor Grimm is not full-time. He puts in a fair number of hours, but he's not there on the premises all of the time. And so if you had you have a mayor and a department head, it puts more of the day-to-day, a little bit more of the day-to-day decision-making on the department heads. If they're really strong, they work cohesively together as a team, that model can work really well. Mayor Grimm also will say, hey, if there is anything, even though I may not be on site, I'm always on call. I think if you talk to the department heads, they would say, yes, I can always get in touch with the mayor. If your team is maybe really good in their technical functional areas, but there is some, not deficiencies, but some growth that they need to go do in how to go work as a team and make these difficult decisions, then a city administrator can fill those gaps. But that model still has a mayor. The city administrator technically works for the mayor and then still department heads. And so that would add an additional layer of cost to the city. I think since Mayor Grimm has transformed that, we've cut more than $1 million out of the budget. So there is a financial savings there as well. So I think either model can work. As long as you have the right people filling the right roles with the clarity of what their responsibilities are.
So, corollary question here. Their mayor, I think, makes $800 a month, the position.
$25,000 a year.
Okay. So, you can't really live on that. So, the way it's currently formulated, you're basically guaranteeing you either have a part-time mayor or a mayor who's retired and just wants to, you know, do this as a avocation.
Yep.
Do you think the mayor position should be paid more so that we have somebody that comes on full bore as a city manager?
I do. And my comparison would be if you look at our county commissioners, I think their pay is around $85,000. Yep. So stark contrast to the mayor. So I think if we want a more full-time mayor and we want people that may have the skills and capabilities to run a complex entity, because the city is complex, I do think there needs to be a pay adjustment. $25,000 is not a living wage, not anywhere close here in Sandpoint. And the city council has talked about that. We just haven't taken any action yet to go look forward to go amend that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that would kind of come back to the question if you wanted to have a city administrator who takes that chunk of the budget.
Yep.
Or should they go to a strong mayor?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to identify as is issues in this campaign or that the city is currently facing?
Well, I think, as I said, I mean, there's several issues. One, you know, we talked about just how to go structure the city government. You know, the other questions around how do we develop the city. A hot topic for a while was whether or not we're going to have parking downtown or not. The council and the mayor had never...
Paid parking.
Paid parking. Yeah. Thank you for the clarification. Yes, paid parking. Everybody likes parking, but it's the question of whether it should be paid. And it's the same question of whether the city lot should be paid or city beach should have paid parking. Really, the bigger question is not whether that's an important part of it, but the bigger question is how do we go maintain the infrastructure in town? So one way that you pay for road improvements and for parking lot improvements and for city beach parking improvement is to put a fee on it. And we can go to Coeur d'Alene and you can go to Post Falls and Spokane, a lot of cities, that's the way that they go help to go maintain that infrastructure. We have clearly heard from the citizens of Sandpoint and the business leaders downtown that they feel if we put parking down in First and Cedar in
street,
that area.
Yeah, the street parking.
Street parking.
Aside from the lots.
The lot, lots, yeah. Yep. So the street parking would be detrimental to customers coming downtown. I think a couple of weeks ago, the mayor and Jason Welker had met with the business community after that, very clear that we're not going to pursue that. So I don't foresee that coming forward to the city council. But now the question is the city parking lot here in town and city beach. How do we go maintain, how do we get the funding to go support the maintenance of those facilities? So there still is conversation whether there should be paid parking for those two areas. And there can be lots of, so if we agree that we want paid parking to go cover the costs of maintaining those, there's a lot of different variations. It might be that, you know, people with 7B on their licenses park for free. Outside visitors then would pay a fee. Might be that you put a small fee on the citizens. I think there's a lot of details that have to be worked out, but it really comes down to this fundamental question of how do we go maintain our infrastructure? And so paying a parking fee is one way. You could do a lot tax. The city
local option tax.
Local option tax.
Which the city did have and used it to do all the improvements to Memorial Field.
Field, yeah.
But then it sunset, and so the city would have to do that again. Yeah.
Yep. In the last November, the city tried doing a lot tax, 1% for road improvements, and it didn't pass for a lot of reasons. And so the citizens spoke, okay, we're not ready to go do that. And so, again, just looking at how do we go find funding to go maintain that infrastructure is the bigger question. It's not so much paid parking or not. The bigger question is how do we go maintain our infrastructure there as well.
But paid parking could help.
Certainly, yep. And the beauty of that is we know we get a large influx of visitors in the summer. And so if we do something, we're actually using their dollars to help go support our city. They're using the facilities while they're here as well. That makes a lot of sense to me, but we've got to go discuss and figure out what is the best version of that if we choose to go do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that one plan that I think is proposed is that city residents could buy a low-cost parking annual parking pass, so let them stay at City Beach for 6 hours.
Yep.
And then visitors and people from out in the county who don't contribute to the city would end up paying to park there. Which would also probably serve to make it a little less congested.
Yes, there is this, there is always a benefit to that, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about something that's been in the news here, the James E. Russell Center. Yeah. And it's been in the news because there's shortfalls in the revenues that were projected it would generate just to operate it. Now, the center itself was built with an amazing $7.5 million gift from the Russell family. But what's your take on the James E. Russell Center? And they just had an opening, as we're speaking right now, for the Russell Center and Traverse Park, a bunch of improvements done there.
Yeah. Well, let me just, before I talk about the funding of it, first just step back and look at the amazing gift that the Russell family provided. And for a community of our size to be able to have a facility of that quality, the park, the skate park, the ball fields, the Russell Center, just an amazing attribute for the city. The question then becomes is, yes, right now it is not generating enough revenue to pay for itself, which means that we're using revenues from the city. Part of that has been learning how to go market the James E. Russell Center. This is not typically, well, I think this is the first time the city has managed a facility like this. So we are learning how to go manage it. We the city hired a new manager over the center about 3 months ago, doing an amazing job.
Ryan Wells.
Ryan Wells, yes. Doing a great job at really connecting with the community, figuring out what are the programs that we want to go put into that to go drive the interest and the citizens to the center. We're seeing some very, very positive trends on the number of annual passes that are being purchased. We're seeing a large increase in the number of hours that the center is being used. And I just firmly believe that as we start to market it even more outside of the city of Sandpoint, to Coeur d'Alene, to Spokane, to others, and we have big tennis matches here and things like that, I think it's just a matter of time where we get that center to be profitable and actually generating enough revenue to sustain itself, because it's an amazing, amazing attribute for the city.
So the philosophical question would be, should a city provide recreation programs, right? And you could just see it as, yeah, they should provide recreation programs. You wouldn't necessarily expect that kind of facility to sustain itself just off operations. So is it appropriate for the city to have a robust recreation department, of which, you know, that might be one of the services it provides? I'm going to wind something else into this question because I know that, for instance, some recreation programs have been pulled back somewhat. And I say that knowing that the adult volleyball leagues aren't going to happen this year. It's a city league that's been running for many years, decades, and very popular. Hundreds of people have been in that program. Yep. And then we have the removal of the lifeguard stands at City Beach. And they're, as I understand, they're now up for sale as surplus, which would seem to indicate that the city isn't going to get back a lifeguard program going at City Beach again. So let's bundle all that together. Yep. You know, what's the role of the city with providing this quality of life for their residents, and then specifically on the lifeguard stands? You think we should get a lifeguard program going again, one way or another? I know there's been an issue just getting the kids to do it.
Yeah. So in the community programs, I think it's actually a cooperative between the city and the citizens of Sandpoint. And what I mean by that is, if there is a gap in the community where there is not an activity and we believe that there's a group of citizens, then I think the city could step in and fill that role. As an example, the volleyball league. But on the other, there are groups now within the community that probably do a better job than the city could do. So youth soccer, youth baseball, those are very well organized, very, very well run. It makes no sense for the city to try and step in and kind of overarchingly, you know, put together programs that would be maybe in conflict with those. So I think there are some where they're already mature and the community is doing a great job running it. There are others where, again, we'll use a volleyball, where there may be a gap where the city could step in and keep that moving along with the hope and anticipation in the future that there would be a community group that would take that over. We see that happening with pickleball now, right? There is a big pickleball organization. The city doesn't have to go manage and run a pickleball program. There are people in the community to go do those. And so I think it's really a partnership, and where the city can find opportunities that aren't being filled by the community today, I think that's a perfect place for us to step in. And your second part of that was, what about the lifeguard program? So the city's intent, well, since I've been on the council the year and a half, has been to go support a lifeguard program. The problem's not that the city doesn't want it. The problem is we cannot get qualified people to come and serve as lifeguards. We increased the salary, hoping that would help this last summer, and still got no takers. So we've got to step back and rethink it. I don't know, maybe there's organizations, just like the U.S. Tennis Association, maybe there is an organization across the country that, you know, can help us to go solve that question of qualified lifeguards. It's a very, very important position, as we all know. I mean, people in the water.
There is a swim program,
yep.
So that's a potential source. There's also the Longbridge Swim,
yep.
And they're very involved in,
yep.
You know, they teach swimming lessons to young kids. So.
Yeah, so we're missing something there. So we've got to go find those resources and connect them. The fact that the city is giving away lifeguard stands is no indication that we don't want a lifeguard program. I think we're just doing a little bit of housekeeping. They're not hard to reconstruct. They're just wood. There's nothing expensive about those. And so I don't want anybody to think just because the lifeguard stands are going away, we have abandoned the desire to have a lifeguard program. That's not the case.
Okay. Well, Rick, Howarth, we are leaving some questions on the table because we're out of time. Tell me, how can people find out more about you and your candidacy?
Yep. So there'll be, obviously, there's a questionnaire being done by the Bee. That will come out. You'll be able to learn more. There will be an open forum, I think.
October 20th.
Yep. Come and participate in that. Come to City Council. I'm there every other Wednesday. Mm-hmm. If you want to see and go look at how I vote and how I interact with the community. So I think that's great. They've got, with the Bee, they'll have my phone number. They have my email. Any questions they can get me as well.
You could throw out a phone number email here if you like.
Yeah. Yep. So my phone number for all of your listeners is 208-920-9090. My email is rick.a.howarth, H-O-W-A-R-T-H, at icloud.com.
Well, Rick Howarth, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah.